discussion on social media lately. Today we're going to talk a bit about why homelessness is front and center on many people's minds and how this fake app fits into the scenario. I'm Laura Wenis, and with me are Laura Waxman and Giovanna Barros. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, how's it going?
So, Laura, you went to a protest early last week. Can you recap for us the situation under the bridge? Who is upset and why? And it's actually not the bridge. I think of it as at the bridge, but it's the freeway.
Right, the underpass.
Yes. So, I'm sorry. The situation under the freeway. Who is upset and why and what's going on there?
Well, a lot of people are upset. So, basically, it was a press conference, an emergency press conference that was called by Poor Magazine. And they've been doing a lot of work on the issue of houselessness, homelessness, and poverty. And so, yeah, this press conference was called. Super Bowl's in town. There's a lot of events going on around that. And some of the homeless people that I interviewed and that were part of this conference have reported being pushed out of downtown areas because of Super Bowl. And walking through the encampments, you could definitely tell that along certain streets, along Harrison, along Trainer Street, where the press conference was held, the homeless, the camps had multiplied. I mean, it was really just like walking through a little village, like a little town. And, so I personally spoke to several of the homeless people that were there, and they had reported the same things of just being relocated. Some had been moved 4 times in one day.
Wow.
So it's a pretty big issue.
Yeah. So, and as far as I understand, there's no official stance, I guess, on whether or not these sweeps are happening. Or I guess the official stance is they are not happening. So nobody is being actively moved
out
of their encampment.
Right. So they're routine cleanups.
Mm-hmm.
So these have been happening. I've heard that they've become more frequent in the past year. I wasn't able to confirm it with DPW, but yeah, so no one's actually being, the homeless people I've talked to, they said that they were actually told, you have to move here,
you have to move down
the street.
Yeah, and I think at this point, numerous other news organizations have found the same, right? I think ABC7 did an I-Team investigation recently in which they, said pretty much the same thing. They found a bunch of people who said, we've been told to move, and if we don't move, then the police will move. Us.
Exactly.
Or encourage us to move, let's say. I think the police in San Francisco are pretty adamant that they cannot actually physically move people just
right,
for being
and that
on
was,
the sidewalk.
Right. And I mean, with some of the comments that, Supervisor Scott Weiner made as well.
Right. That's what set this whole thing off, in my mind. Did it start before that, or did it start with Scott Weiner's commentary?
Well, it was always going to be a thing because of what Mayor Lee said so many months ago about the homeless having to leave downtown for the Super Bowl. So coming up to the Super Bowl, it was always going to be an issue, I think. But you're right, Scott Weiner chose that moment to say homeless tents need to go away. And since then, we've had news story after news story about homelessness. And I mean, on Division, I've never seen so many tents. And San Francisco Magazine did a count, found more than 100, I think. And they also did that investigation that you're talking about where it doesn't seem like it's an official crackdown, but seems to be like...
Something's happening.
Yeah, I mean, and the homeless people I've talked to and the ones you've talked to, Laura, they all say that they've been moved from different areas of the freeway that are less visible, to different areas of the freeway that are less visible, so it seems pretty obvious what's going on.
Right.
From downtown to the freeway, or from any part of town to the freeway?
Yeah, I didn't really... No one I talked to said they came from downtown, and San Francisco Magazine felt the same way or had the same result. But the people I talked to said that they were moving down the freeway from down the overpass to areas where cars wouldn't see them as much, say like no on-ramps or anything like that, so that people visiting the Super Bowl wouldn't be able to see a bunch of encampments as soon as they got on the freeway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I think that the press conference / protest that you went to, they had a demand, right? They proposed a solution.
Well, it was interesting because they kind of did, Poor Magazine did their own study, their own research. I think they picked 86 homeless people out of that area, out of the Division encampments, who participated. It was over a span of 1 year, and I guess they kind of just documented their experience with, the city and the sweeps. Some of the information that they came up with out of this study, this research, was that I think 94% of these people, lost their property due to these sweeps. So, and all of them, I think 100%, they said, had experienced sweeps just being out there. So one of the demands that this group has is land. You know, they were saying that if you want us to move, then you need to give us a piece of land, a plot, you know, something public to kind of go to and feel safe and not have to move all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. If you want us to go somewhere, right, give us somewhere to go, essentially.
Yeah. And at the homelessness protest yesterday outside of Super Bowl City, I was talking to a lot of people who said the same thing. And actually, Edwin Lindo, who's running for our supervisor, said that this would be a policy he would be greatly in favor of, just following a Seattle model where you just clear out a space of land and make it into a tent city, and you have some porta potties, you have some security, you have some running water, and then, you know, it's not a permanent solution. These people are still in tents, but it's better than these sweeps that just move them around the city. It doesn't make any sense.
I guess the question is just for me in my mind, you know, where in the city would this go happen? I feel like this would be outside of.
Yeah, can you imagine the uproar that would be caused if there was an official tent city that was just placed in Dolores Park permanently?
I would love that. That would be amazing.
I think you would be one of few, honestly. Although, I have to say there has been a pretty significant outpouring of support from the neighborhood. I mean, we can talk about that, you know, more in depth in a second. But people really care. A lot of people care in the sense that they feel unsafe and they don't want these tent encampments to be there. And other people really care in terms of, you know, they feel that there is no other option for the folks who have no house, and taking away tents is not the solution. In fact, there was a fundraiser that was enormously successful on that front. But more on that in a second. You know, we're talking about land. Do you know if San Francisco has any options for considering a housing first policy? I mean, I think Utah has been very successful in on that front, where the priority is just the thing that people who are homeless need is a home. So let's put them in some sort of subsidized housing so that they have some degree of stability and can get back on their feet.
I mean, I think that's what the Navigation Center model is right. Transitional housing to permanent housing, so that you take whole encampments at once with their partners, with their pets, with their belongings, so that homeless people are more likely then to enter the system, because one of the main obstacles is that people just don't want to give up what little they have and what few partners they have, and if they have a dog, whatever.
Yeah. Which is a thing that, for those of you who don't know, you cannot do in the shelter system. Essentially, you have to get in line at a certain point. You have to stay in line. You can't bring a lot of your belongings. If those you can, most likely will not be secure because you have to keep them with you. And you can't go in with a partner, usually, and you can't bring your pet.
Yeah, I mean, it's horrible. It doesn't make any sense. So the Navigation Center model, I think two housing is a good one. But then, I mean, we run into the same problem that San Francisco has a housing crisis.
Sure, so, yeah.
Like, we can't even take care of our middle class, like, let alone our very low income or homeless people. I'm not sure what the solution is, but...
Yeah, and I mean, I wonder sometimes if the solution is to transition people to housing that might not necessarily be in San Francisco proper, but where you can get connected to that housing in San Francisco. I mean, I assume that a house somewhere in, like, you know, Brisbane or whatever would be better than being homeless in San Francisco. But then again, I mean, I don't know, because I haven't experienced homelessness here.
So what I've heard, just speaking to some of the advocates too, is that, you know, taking these people away from their resources isn't necessarily the best solution.
Yeah, that's true. You could be stranded in a home in Brisbane and not have any connections to people or resources or services.
So
anything.
I think that's why they're very adamant about having that in the city.
Right. That's true.
And it would require some sort of regional government model, which is like the answer to all of our problems, but never going to happen.
It's so out of reach.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about these reactions from the neighborhood, because I think they've been really interesting. You know, first we had the commentary about Super Bowl City and homeless needing to leave, and then we had the letter from Scott Wiener, and then we had this press conference / protest. And I think during the course of that, there was this fundraiser for tents that took place, where a Mission resident said, all right, if they're going to take their tents away, I'm going to replace them. And I think he started, what was it, with a guild of $2,000?
Right. And then it doubled. I think he exceeded his goal within that day.
Yeah.
And then he raised it to 4,000, exceeded that within 2 days. Correct me if I'm wrong, but within 2 days it was $10,000.
Yeah.
I think that was the goal that he set.
It has surpassed 23,000 like yesterday, and I'm pretty sure it's going to keep going.
Yeah.
Grassroots right there.
That's wow. Cool. But on the other hand, I like scouring on Nextdoor, you see people trying to do the opposite fundraiser. So they saw this GoFundMe. They uh-huh. said, we hate encampments. We hate homeless people being around the mission, mm-hmm. Homeowners mostly. And they started talking about wanting to get a fundraiser together to fundraise for the broken windows or broken property, stolen property, things like that of mm-hmm. residents. So there's a lot of grassroots on both sides of the issue.
Well, how successful has the counter fundraiser been?
I mean, they didn't actually launch a GoFundMe. They just started talking about it. So they haven't right. actually done anything.
They're organizing.
There you go. I think that's indicative. I mean, like, well, everyone course, votes yeah. with their dollars in this yeah. case. And we can see which proposal is the more favored one.
Well, and it's a ridiculous idea. I mean, what, first of all, like, everyone's broken
just
windows.
Just get right to it, Joe. Tell us how you feel.
and stolen property is due to the homeless encampments. That's not true. And how are you supposed to even do this? How are you supposed to fundraise money for everyone's stolen stuff? Like, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that's come up, I think, with this fundraiser is that a lot of people have been responding by saying, well, this is nice, but now you've raised a lot of money. Couldn't you put it towards something better? Or, like, why don't you solve this problem my way? I have a different proposal for a solution. Why don't you put the money that you've raised toward that solution? And I think, you know, there's some legitimate concerns in there about if we continue to have these encampments, maybe we should provide some sort of, you know, sanitary aid in terms of trash collection and, you know, sharps collection and human waste disposal. But I thought the response to that was also very interesting because I think he came back and said, you know, if you have a solution, maybe you should approach your solution your way. This is what I set out to do, and that's what I'm going to do. So I'm very excited to see how that plays out, definitely.
Got to follow up with him.
Sean, where are you at? I think he's busy. I think he's been inundated with media requests.
Wait, but that says a lot, too, about, you know, the community and wanting to help and wanting to...
Yeah.
to put their money there, so right. that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I think so too. In stark contrast to the thing you discovered yesterday.
Right. That was interesting.
So we're talking about an app, a fake app called SnapCamp.
SnapCamp.
So tell us what is going on with that.
Well, so we actually, you know, this was brought to us through Twitter. You know, someone tweeted at us and kind of this whole conversation started, but basically SnapCamp is an app supposedly that helps the user take pictures of homeless encampments and, you know, from a safe distance, that's literally what the website says, to take pictures of people trespassing, hanging out, whatever the issue is.
Wow.
And then report it, flag it, so that, you know, it's kind of a network so that other people know, and mm-hmm. it's almost like Nextdoor. So, you know, we followed up with that because it seemed, first of all, there was a lot of reaction from, it was on Facebook, you know.
People were mad.
People were outraged.
People were pissed off.
Right. And, you know, I mean, the way it was put, I can understand. There were some testimonials on the site, you know, and it was very, very interesting. Like some of the alleged users had said that, you know, just really kind of extreme things about homelessness and homeless encampments.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of outrage. I connected with the creator of this app. Turns out it's not real. And it was a really interesting conversation after that.
Why?
The point was, in his words, this was all through email, but in his words he said,
his or her, right? We don't know this person.
Oh, I'm sorry. I totally jumped. in my mind.
I mean, statistically, what's more likely? I'm just saying. The gender was never revealed. But anyway, carry on.
But, you know, in tech. So this person said that that basically, you know, it was this, commentary on the tech industry. And this person works in tech, is the owner of a software company. And I guess was just a little disheartened by the lack of, you know, just not wanting to help the community, and he said this person said that they were trying to help find a way and, you know, to help out,
mm-hmm.
but this was a joke and it was satire,
mm-hmm.
and if this person set out to make people mad, it worked.
Oh yeah, and I mean the commentary that was made was immediately supplied by the people who didn't, you know, realize right. that it was not real. I mean, immediately people were like, well, don't you realize how this makes tech culture seem, and this is like epitomizing all the horrible stereotypes, and why are you like this, and why can't you see that, like, why don't you have empathy? Just like, all, I mean, the commentary was made. It just wasn't necessarily made by the person who created the fake app, but I assume that was the intention.
Right, and I mean, it definitely got a conversation going, mm-hmm. so that was the intent, that worked. And we'll see what happens. You know, we were communicating, and this person said the website will probably stay live for a little while. They called it art. They said it was art. And yeah, I mean, it would be interesting to follow up to see how this plays out. You know, regardless of whether people are angry by it or not, I think that a point was made.
Yeah, for sure.
And, you know, hopefully that will inspire people in the tech industry, you know, in the community to think about some of these issues that are going on.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, didn't he or she have a message to them that they left you with?
Yeah, basically this person said to all the angry people out there that if they care enough to tweet, they should go do something about it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that was the message.
Well,
what do you guys think about that?
I think it's hilarious. I mean, it's funny. I don't know that it does much, but it's
I don't know. I was moved, like, not necessarily to do something because, yeah, I'm not really sure why. I think maybe because it was just so fascinating to watch this that I wasn't really thinking about the actual issue at hand anymore.
Right.
I was more thinking about how people respond. And, you know, how interesting it is that someone decided this is their reaction to the situation. And like, how do you even come up with this? Like, wow.
Well, this person said that, you know, in tech, there's this mentality of, okay, let's solve it. Let's find the easiest right. solution. Like,
yeah.
let's create something to take this problem away.
Mm-hmm. And that can go awry.
Right.
You know, that can very easily be seen as something, I mean, the solution can be superficial. It cannot actually work, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And I think often there's backlash against that exact phenomenon where people approach the problem in a way that doesn't make sense to everyone else.
Right. So in that sense, I think it was pretty deep.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, interesting approach.
On the other hand, there has been a different group of people who reacted by doing something, by immediately organizing something, which, Joe, you went to that event with the drag queens.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
I mean, it was a very San Francisco response. So a bunch of a group of drag queens who said that they had been, you know, they're just friends, they've been meeting regularly and, quote, lamenting the state of our city, decided late last week to just have a clothing and food drive, and they went out 2 days later with, dozens of items and handed them out to the homeless and cooked food, hot food, so people got meals out of it. And it was, I mean, it was like a concrete thing that they could do, and they came out in drag, so it was very, you know, picture perfect, like typical San Francisco event. And it was, I mean, especially I think coming off, like, a columnist in San Francisco Chronicle the day before, maybe 2 days before, had written something about how we shouldn't give tents to people, to homeless people, because it enables homelessness. It was C.W. Nevius.
Yeah, who interviewed one homeless man who said, all I want to do right now is just get high.
He must have chosen the only homeless guy on that block who was like 21 and a stoner. And it was incredible. But the reason I thought about it when at that drag queen giveaway was because there was this woman who said she had been in a domestic violence relationship, abusive, the night before. Her tent had been slashed.
So her partner just slashed open her tent as retaliation?
She didn't really get into it. It seemed to have been a long, drawn-out, bad relationship. But she said that the worst had been last night when her tent was destroyed. So she had been in the rain, because it rained that night, without shelter. And then the next day, she went right for the only tent in that pile of items. And she was ecstatic that she could get it. And she started crying right away, because the ability to have, you know, a shelter in the winter cold, and she said a place where her violent partner would not be able to recognize her anymore, mm-hmm. somewhere where he wouldn't be able to know where she is,
mm-hmm.
Was invaluable. And so I thought, perfect contrast to C.W. Nevius's article. I mean, like, if if you want a single one story why giving tents is a good idea, even just on a personal level, regardless of policy, it would be that story.
Yeah, personal safety for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was the, I mean, I know for this person, it was probably an extremely emotional afternoon, but what was the vibe like there? What was the scene?
You know, it was pretty, I mean, everyone I talked to was ecstatic that they all said this is extremely useful because, and it was things like clothes, shoes, I mean, really sturdy boots, like new boots. Some people dropped off like brand new, probably $100, $200 boots, perfect for the winter. You know, trash bags, which you don't really think of as that useful, but really they can carry a lot of stuff and they're pretty strong. Things like tampons, which are really expensive and a lot of homeless women can't get. And actually I talked to a guy who said, you know, these tampons are perfect because I'm with a partner and she can't afford this a lot of the time. And it's just something that I wouldn't have thought of necessarily.
Oh yeah. And it's certainly like something that you need sort of maintain your dignity. Street.
Well, yeah, that was the other thing is that, you know, among all the toiletries, there was some perfume. And I was talking to this woman, Mama Donna, who said, I love this stuff because really you do get undignified on the street and you need to be able to smell good sometimes. And it's, you know, small things like that really help. And they were both tents, clothes, food, you know, the big essentials, and small things like perfume, necklaces, bracelets. Basically anything people could donate, and everyone was all the homeless who came out were very happy that this was happening.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad to see that. And it's a stark contrast to some of the other things that we've seen, like you said. What about yesterday at Super Bowl City? It sounds like there was some action there, retaliating against at least the perception, if not the reality, that people have been shoved out of those areas because they're considered unsightly.
Yeah, so I think more than 200 people probably came out, and I got there a little late, but what happened initially was that they wanted to set up an encampment on the Embarcadero. So they did. They brought, I think, five large tents with signs, you know, messages written on them, and they tried to set them on the sidewalk, and the police, of course, immediately circled them. I mean, really a gigantic showing of cops. It must have been more cops than protesters, and said, if you put down these tents, it's an encampment and we'll have to, you know, sweep them away. So they carried them the entire night just above the ground because then technically they wouldn't be on the sidewalk.
Oh, no.
And then they had a protest. I mean, you had an hour and a half of testimony from people who worked with homeless people to Supervisor David Campos, Tom Amiano, former supervisor. Lots of people talking and then connecting the issue of homelessness to lack of housing, to SFPD, which is, you know, whenever the cops come up and make a presence at a protest, you're going to talk about SFPD and the Mario Woods shooting, the Alex Nieto shooting, Amilcar Perez Lopez. So all of these issues are being connected in San Francisco and all related to the Super Bowl, not only because of the concrete, you know, $5 million price tag that the city's paying for it, but the symbolic nature of this event. It's an event for the super rich. It's, you know, no one else is going to be attending that game.
I
think tickets are pretty expensive.
Sure, yeah. The game itself, but like Super Bowl City and the attraction of that.
Oh, well, the attraction is, I mean, you can go in for free. So yeah, I mean, you know, the plebes can go into Super Bowl City and do whatever they want. The Super Bowl as an event is all these parties, these super elite VIP parties come to San Francisco, and it's going to be, you know, people like Skrillex and different celebrities playing, and you have to have a ticket. Snoop Dogg is in town. So it's just a very, I mean, it's a perfect event to highlight these issues. And the national media is here. Everyone said that the national media is here. We need to get this message out to show them that the San Francisco that Mayor Ed Lee wants to show you is not the actual San Francisco we live with day to day. So, you know, perfect protest in that way. And especially just a few days after a protest this weekend, this past weekend on Mario Woods. So it seems to be, you know, gaining steam, a lot of this. And 2016 is shaping up to be a very interesting year.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and I think this week in general is filled with action and visibility for a lot of different issues. I think this weekend on Saturday, there's also a protest. But actually, on Saturday, come to think of it, I mean, the city is going to be full of protests of very different persuasions. There's going to be one.
Uber, right?
Didn't Uber already happen?
Well, I'm not sure. I think there's one this weekend. But,
yeah, and they had a very low turnout.
Oh, shame.
Yeah. So on at City Hall, at Civic Center, there's going to be a protest, a walking block party, I think they're calling it, against displacement and sort of talking about reclaiming the city for people who have lived here for many years. And then, you know, that in contrast with, I believe there is also a pro-rape rally happening
that just
downtown.
Got canceled.
I saw
this morning.
Oh, wait, how nice!
Pro rape.
They were talking about it yesterday. Actually, it was this. It's this men's group who advocated for the legalization of rape. It was ridiculous.
It
was going to be at Balboa Park Bar Station.
Do you know why they canceled it?
I don't know.
Because it was a joke.
I don't think
like
it was
so
a joke.
Like so many provocative things these days. It may have just been a joke.
It would be a bad joke if it were.
Yeah, pretty in poor taste, I think it would be there. And then there's also talk of in the Castro at a book signing, I believe, there's going to be, or there may or may not be, apparently they have backed out before, but there may or may not be a Westboro Baptist Church protest in front of that bookstore because the author is LGBT or the book has themes or something that they for some reason object to. So there may be that, and then there may also be a counter protest, which
I'm sure will be bigger than all of these WC protests are dwarfed by the counter protest.
Yeah. Well, I hope so. I mean, this is San Francisco. Yeah. You would think that
strong
kind of
showing.
Thing would be
Absolutely.
Less popular. But yeah, so I think there's definitely been a spirit of certainly opposition. I mean, people have been saying that the city has been united in its hatred of the Super Bowl.
It's crazy.
Everyone can agree.
When I think also, like, just recognizing what you said earlier, you know, that everything is it is connected, you know, like all these issues. And I think that is the point, you know, that police brutality, homelessness, displacement, gentrification, you know, it's all connected.
Yeah.
So I think that's why we're seeing this uprising right now.
And it's a good tactic for coalitions to form alliances with other coalitions. It means that when you have a protest on homelessness, you get twice as many bodies out on the street, which is really useful. For them to have 200 people come out on a Wednesday night to downtown San Francisco, which is kind of far for a lot of people, is pretty impressive.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and I think it showcases, you know, it's not just that people are grumpy about the Super Bowl snarling traffic, it's that this is being used as a catalyst for highlighting a lot of issues that people really care about.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I think that's enough out of us. You have been tuned in, of course, to Listen Local, brought to you by the staff of Mission Local. If you know something that we don't that you think we should, shoot us an email at info@missionlocal.com. You can also tweet at us. Our handle is @MLNow. When we're out, you should check out some electronic tunes and more from across the pond, brought to you by John Digital. Thanks for listening. Yeah.